So why is your mom not here?
I would like to say she had the perfect storm with the worst outcome. A couple of weeks before she passed, she had been in the hospital for pneumonia. She was released and got home and everything was fine. Talked to her that evening and she had told me that, you know, she had some concerns and her hands were tingling and said okay and just kind of really didn't pay attention to it. And I got a call from my brother telling me that she was down and he thought she was, you know, having a stroke, but come to find out, her electrolytes were out of whack, which sent her into cardiac arrest. They classified it as a unwitnessed cardiac arrest because CPR wasn't started immediately, which basically resulted in a brain injury and her being put on life support, which ultimately we made the decision to remove.
This is Sorry to Hear That, a podcast for people trying to understand grief and loss. I'm CJ Williams.
My name is Lachelle, and I am going to talk about my mother, Linda.
Tell me about your mom. Who is she?
Who is she? She was tough. She was, man, hell on wheels. Like, that lady, oh my gosh. You know, it's hard for me to talk about her and not give the whole thing. I think people want to often say just everything that was great. And like, my mom was, she had been through a lot and you definitely knew it. She was a tough, tough, tough one, but gentle at the same time. You know, she always told us growing up, you never let anybody go hungry because you never know who that person is. And you never know where your next meal is coming from. So although we struggled a lot, like she always found room and extra to share with someone else. She would cuss you up and down. And she had a laugh that was just contagious. Like, yeah, when she was tickled, it just filled the room.
What'd she look like?
Short. Short and round, I would tell her. It's weird. I felt like when she was alive, I never took the time to look at her. And if I look at a picture that's on my phone, like I remember the smile and these cheekbones. I think, but what's crazy is I'll remember like what she looked like the day we laid her to rest. Like, I remember that so vividly. It was like she was flawless. Hair, makeup, nails, face, like, yeah. Maybe just because she looked peaceful. Her life was filled with so many challenges and just so many disappointments and just the things you go through in life. You know what I mean? Like, she was always worried about something, always on edge about something. And I think that day just, it was just her day. Just peaceful, like perfect peace. I don't know, everything was just perfect. Not a hair out of place, not an eyebrow out of place. Yeah, she just looked good that day. It's one of those things where it was almost, she looked too good and too peaceful for me to like mourn that day over the way she looked. Yeah.
It sounds like you kind of wish that she had felt that peaceful in life.
I do. I would say maybe the last, maybe 6 or 7 years of her life, I think I finally convinced her to like travel and get out and come and visit. And I think she was finally understanding there was more to life than raising kids because we were all grown at that point, you know? And it was okay for her to live life and just be okay and not worry about us all the time. So, yeah. Yeah.
was she on life support?
10 days.
Was she ever aware that you were around?
No. I say no from a medical standpoint. They say no. But I feel like in my heart of hearts, she knew. Just with like little things. She would get agitated, like when they would move her because of the tube and like her pulse and blood pressure and stuff would shoot up. And she was always hot, like, I'm hot, Michelle. And I remember taking like a cold towel and like placing it on her face and her neck to cool her down and just kind of talk her down. And she would clench her fist and I would tell her she would have to like loosen and release. And she would. So I feel like there is a part of me that deep down inside, she knew I was there. And she was aware whether or not, you know, medically that was possible. But from their standpoint, she wasn't feeling any pain. She wasn't conscious of anything that was going on around her.
So how did you get to the hospital? And then what happened?
I was actually in Maryland at the time, completely on a different coast. And I got the call. And I think when I finally tried to contact my brothers and my dad and my aunt, and I was staying at a hotel at the time, and I remember I threw all my stuff in a suitcase, and the guy I was dating at the time, his mom lived in like the outskirts of Baltimore, and he booked me a ticket to fly out the next morning, and I drove from here to her house, which is about 45 minutes to an hour. And I remember it was raining, and I had two of my girlfriends on the phone, and I got there and she was waiting for me with tea. And I don't know. I tried to sleep and didn't get much sleep. And I took the first flight out the next morning and made it to the hospital.
So what was walking into the hospital?
I think mentally, I had already tried to prepare myself for what I was going to see. Walking in, she was in ICU. And when I walked in, I remember she was intubated and she had bandages around her wrist and IV tubes everywhere, of course. And I don't remember crying, honestly, when I saw her. And I think for me, it was more so, let me focus, like I'm here, let me understand and let me see what's going on. At the time, I don't think emotion took over. It was fact-finding for me at that moment. And just trying to figure out what was going on and trying to, I guess, just organize everybody and everything. They got the basics. I think years later, I think I'm still searching for some. Like it's those pieces of the puzzle that I still don't have that I may never have. During those 10 days, I got the big puzzle pieces. It's the little ones that I'm still missing. Was there something that they missed at the hospital before they released her? Was there something that maybe I should have heard in her voice the last time she called me? Was there something that she knew about that she didn't tell us? You know, what were her last minutes before she collapsed? Like, what kind of mood was she in? What did that look like? It's all the what ifs.
Lachelle, being in the medical field like she is, probably knows a little bit more than she should. So when she walked into her mother's hospital room,
I knew in my heart of hearts that there was like no coming back from where we were at that point, like based on what I saw at that moment. Over the next couple of days, they did test after test, and it was, let's wait and see. Let's wait and see. And I remember there was a doctor that came in, and I remember she didn't speak. She didn't acknowledge me. She didn't say anything. She basically came in, checked the computer, and I remember it hit a nerve. I think at that point I was just like, wait, pause. Like,
who are you?
Who are you? What is going on? Because you're running in and out and like nobody's told me anything at this point. And I remember one of the nurses came in and I said, you know, You find me at the attending. I need to know what's going on. I need answers now. And the team came in, and the doctor was awesome. She drew on the board and she talked about, you know, what happens when the brain is deprived of oxygen and the different parts that are affected. And she talked about all that, and she would have no quality of life. She would be in a vegetative state. You and your family need to start thinking about a DNR and your wishes as far as removing life support. For me, I was just like, it's a no-brainer. Like, my mom was very upbeat, very jovial. Like, when she was in a good mood, she was in a good mood. Like, and for her to be in the bed the way she was not my mom.
Were you in the hospital every day?
Yeah. What did you do? I think watch TV, sang to her, talked to her. I held her hand. I laid my head on her chest to hear her heartbeat.
Lachelle and one of her brothers were there when her mother died. They stayed with her mom for almost an hour before they left and headed home.
We get back to the house and some friends of the family, I remember they cooked, and I ate and I showered and I went to sleep. I would say that was probably the best night of sleep I'd had since it had all started.
Sitting in the hospital day in and day out, talking, singing, and loving your mother as she lays in the bed unresponsive. When I asked Lachelle if she felt supported in her time at the hospital, Lachelle was sure she and her family were in the right hands at this place.
But it was like extended family. Like, I couldn't have asked for a better group of people to walk that journey with. And I remember one of the nurses, when I got the news from the doc, she was in the room. And I remember I teared up. And I remember looking at her and she was tearing up. I'd say I was tearing up as if it was a family member. Some of those same nurses were in the room during Super Bowl. And I remember telling her, like, if my mom were at home, she would have people over. Like, she knew nothing about football. But she still would have had a house full of people, you know, watching the game. And to have people in and out during Super Bowl, like, I don't know, it was comforting, you know? But for me, trying to rationalize, I don't know if that's the word I would use. I think for me, the way I operate, when I saw it, like, I felt like I gave them time to try to figure it out. And when I was, I don't know, at that point, like, I knew. And I felt like I just went into autopilot. Like, what's next? Like, what do I need to prepare for? Because my mom's not walking out of here. But the crazy thing is, I remember I left the hospital one day because I had to leave between shift change. So I think it was like 6 to 7 or 7 to 8. I can't remember. But everybody had to leave the floor while they did shift change with the oncoming. And I remember going home and stopping at Big Lots and buying a completely different bed set. And I went home and I stripped her bed and I put this brand new comforter set and everything else on. Which is weird because I knew she would never touch that bed again. But it was like, I felt like I needed to do it. I just remember I used to fuss at her all the time about the one she had. And I was just like, I'm so tired of looking at this. So I stripped her bed and put a new one on there.
What did you do with the old one?
I think I threw it in the trash.
You're like, now's my time.
Done, Mom. Done.
I told you 1,000 times.
Like, she was that person. Like, she wanted to hold on to everything. And I was just like, it's okay to let go of stuff. Like, yeah.
Sometimes when I'm interviewing people, I will ask them unexpected questions. And up until this point with Lachelle, I hadn't really heard a whole lot about feelings or emotion or even processing. So I asked.
Had I let myself be consumed with emotion, I wouldn't have been able to function. I think I had a lot of responsibility and I bared a lot of that burden. I have moments, like I said, when I was with her and I would hear songs or just sitting with her and looking at her hands or, you know, rubbing her feet. So I had moments of sorrow and pain. I had fits of anger with people for actions or inactions. I remember outbursts. But at that moment, my thing was, it's not about you. It's not about anybody else but my mom, you know, and if you weren't on this board or this bandwagon I was on, then I didn't need you in my space. I didn't need any extra drama. I didn't need any extra opinions because everybody had an opinion as far as what they thought we should have done, what they thought the outcome would be. But I feel like there were times, and I think I had this conversation with her more than once, where I just told her, like, if you and God have talked and you're tired, it's okay. You know? It's okay. So, the spiritual part of me knows that she's in a better place and that she's not suffering. And, you know, her and God had a talk and he allowed me to keep her for 10 days. Because when I got the initial call, I remember hitting the floor and I was on the phone with my cousin. And I said, I'm not ready to lose my mom yet. Like, I am not ready to let go of her. And he let me keep her for 10 more days. And,
the relationship between mother and daughter is complex, but unique. And so one relationship is truly just one relationship. They really cannot be compared. So Lachelle describes the relationship that she had with her own mother.
I'm the only girl, so we had a very unique and complicated relationship at times. I think as we both got older, we had a better understanding and appreciation for each other's roles.
Or the change in roles.
Or the change in roles, yeah. I don't know, that's my girl. You know, I would call her some days just to say, hey, like, how was your day? If it was nothing but like a 2-minute conversation, you know. Working my puzzle book, you know, watching Jerry Springer or Maury. It's like her trash TV.
Absolutely.
Or she would call me, you know, at 8 o'clock in the morning, my time, which was 5 o'clock her time. And there would be days where she was just like, I was restless. I got up and washed my face and brushed my teeth and said my prayers. And I'm just sitting here flipping through TV or through the channels, Lachelle. All right, Ma. All right. You know? Yeah. It's the things you take for granted. It's the 2-minute conversations and the random phone calls at, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning. I think it's crazy. I remember having conversations with friends and we would talk about, oh my God, I can't fathom the day that like I lose a parent, I lose my mom. And you can't until you actually do. But I still have days where I'm like, God, why? Like, there are so many other people who've done so many other things that are living like lives that are 10 times worse. And they're still here. Like, why my mom? Why now? You know what I mean? I think for me, reconciling it all, because there are days where I go back and forth between the different stages. You know, I'm angry one day and I'm denial and blah, blah, blah. But there's also a part of me that's like, I feel like I just haven't seen her. Like, it's just time for me to go home to visit. And so I think sometimes I sit in a space of denial just because I wasn't in the same state as her and I didn't see her every day. And so it will be like, it's almost like the norm. Like, I just need to go see her. So I think that's one of the biggest things that I struggle with now, 3 years later, is trying to reconcile it all. Because some days I feel like those pieces fit together and other days, like, it's like it just happened and I don't understand how we're back here and why we are back here. You know, so I struggle to try to keep the woman that she was alive in my mind versus what I saw towards the end.
People do their best to be loving and comforting, but sometimes it just doesn't work for someone who's bereaved and looking for the right thing to be said to them. Or the person saying it should be saying the right thing too. It gets really complicated, actually. So one of the best tactics that Lachelle experienced while dealing with her own grief with her mother was this.
Did you feel supported in your grief? So after all the rigmarole was done, you're back at work and you're back in your life again, or your new life. Did you feel supported?
By some. And what I've learned since then is, you know, in order to be supported, you also have to let people support you. You have to let them in to support you. But part of me was I didn't let a lot of people in because I felt like if you haven't been through it, like it's really hard for me to talk about things. And if you can't relate, like I don't want to hear a bunch of I'm sorry's. Like I'm not that person. I don't want to hear I'm sorry doesn't do much for me. While I appreciate it, it doesn't help me. So if you haven't lost a parent, it's hard for me to, I don't know, I guess cry and talk to you about it because you haven't experienced it. So a lot of, for me, I just internalized, put it on the back burner, and I just stayed on autopilot, went to work, did what I need to do, and just kept going.
One of my favorite questions to ask everyone is, who are you now? And who do you think you'll be in 5 years as you think about the way that your grief has evolved over time? I'm going to be honest. They all have the same answer. Probably because it's a evolving answer. So I'll give you one big hint. I don't know is an appropriate answer.
So I had a lot of friends reach out and just say, you know, if you need anything, I'm here. And I think at a time like that, like that's the most you can ask for. Or just, you know, if you want to talk, if you want to sit on the phone and cry, if you just want to sit on the phone and breathe, like I'm here. And I find myself telling my friends that when they lose a parent, and I'm just like, you know, there are no words that I can give you right now that's going to ease the pain. Nothing I can say. But if you just want to sit on the phone and listen to each other breathe, I will sit on the phone and we will listen to each other breathe. Like, because again, that 45 minute drive while it was raining, like my two girlfriends sit on the phone, listen to me like cry and whimper. Like I had nothing. And despite me having nothing, they talked
And she was like, we're not letting you off the phone until you get there. And they did not hang up until they heard her voice when she opened the door.
Realities are, we always wonder if the grass is greener somehow, especially when our loved one dies. Would it have been easier or better on them or us if they died suddenly because they were sick at their desk instead of the way that they actually passed? So when I asked Lachelle if she would change anything, anything at all.
I don't think I've taken the time to really just sit and run through like losing my mom. Like I can recall signing her name to a bunch of stuff and yes, she needs to do this and we need to do that for her and blah, blah, blah. But again, just being on autopilot, I think for me, I haven't taken the time to just sit and just talk to my mom and just say, you know, Ma, like you said there'd be days, but boy, you didn't prepare me for this day. And allowing myself, I think just allowing myself to say, okay, Lachelle, you did what you could do to the best of your ability. Unsettled with it, I think is a good word. I'm still very unsettled with some of the details. You know, I almost think it probably would have been easier had, you know, when it happened, had she passed and we didn't have 10 days, you know what I'm saying? And we didn't have to make the decision. But, you know, at this point it is what it is. There are parts of me that thinks it would have been easier had she just passed when she, you know, first went down. But I stop and think about it, and those 10 days were like, I wouldn't trade those to sit and look at the freckles on her hand, to play in her hair, to rub her feet, to lay on her chest. That's, I don't know, that's our time. Like, nobody else was there but us. I wouldn't trade it, even though it's hard.
This podcast is created, produced, and edited by me, CJ Williams. I'd love if you could take a moment to rate and comment about the show on your favorite listening app, whatever it may be. It really does help a lot. The biggest compliment, of course, would be for you to share your favorite episode with others. Visit the website, sorrytohearpodcast.com. There you can get show notes, sign up for the newsletter, and donate. It'll be much appreciated. I'll see you again in 2 weeks. I'm CJ Williams, and this is Sorry to Hear That.